Great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com radio installment. Today's featured guest, Mr. John Embry from Sprott Asset Management. John Embry, an industry expert in precious metals, researched the sector now for decades, and he has accumulated an awful lot of industry experience as portfolio manager and specialist and many other titles there at Sprott Asset Management. It's a pleasure to have you back, sir.
Chris, it's always great to talk to you.
Thank you. And you know, on the heels of one of the best gold rallies in months, we saw some of the big names in the precious metals sector do well. We saw Newmont Mine up double digits, Gold Corp, several others, and one of our favorites here, Seabridge, doing remarkably well in recent weeks. Explosive moves. Care to share your thoughts on the precious metals sector?
I've been very vocal on the subject that this is probably, I've never seen the equities more undervalued in the context of the gold price. And more so, I mean, I think the gold price is dramatically undervalued. So, I mean, this is sort of a double-levered upside potential. And what we've seen just in the last few weeks when the Huey Index rallied some like 30-35%, I think it's just kind of the jacks for openers. And we're just getting ready to see some serious moves. But it's going to need the support of a higher gold price.
We certainly have seen signs of a higher gold price in recent months, some stability, backing and filling, if you will. And some folks are looking at the domestic numbers, you know, some of the economic numbers for signs of just what the Fed might do. Hawkish talk from the Fed officials and governors and policymakers of the last several months, but not a lot of action. And now it looks like there won't almost certainly be a rate hike this week, and not likely one before the end of this year as well. What do you think the Fed officials have in mind for 2016?
There might not be a rate hike in my lifetime, and I hope to have a full life. I mean, the fact is, Chris, I mean, the world is absolutely polluted with debt. I mean, the amount of debt globally, let alone in the United States itself, is so staggering that that's the reason for zero interest rate policy and what have you, because the system can't handle higher interest rates because the debt would collapse and that would take the banking system with it. So the idea of higher rates voluntarily to me is just off the table.
There's an awful lot, I think, among the top hedge fund managers, money managers, policymakers about this debt debate. Even rhetoric from China with regard to this concern over deflation. But to hear you frame up the argument, which I think is the one that makes the most sense here, the debt, as you say, is unsustainable. The global economic system simply can't maintain even the hint of higher rates because the debt burden and the interest burden would be so enormous that obviously there would be bankruptcies everywhere, and that would become systemic, like a domino effect, just taking down first institution, and maybe even country after country throughout the world. Is that why we seem to have permanently zero rates and actually negative rates slightly in the EU for the first time in global history?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, I mean, what people don't seem to realize that when the global crisis hit 7 years ago, 7-8 years ago, it's 07, 08, there was roughly, and I mean these numbers are rough because I'm not sure who computes them to the last zero, debt in the world then was roughly $140 trillion. That's all the debt through all the countries. Well, now that debt, to keep this thing afloat, that debt is now comfortably over $200 trillion. And I mean, in the economies, I would submit, are weakening everywhere. So the ability to keep this sort of going for any length of time, I think, is becoming more and more difficult. And the idea that they could raise rates in this environment, to me, is preposterous. So that's why, one of the reasons I like real things like gold and silver, because paper is going to be debased at an ever-increasing rate.
Again, you know, we just read article after article about officials at the People's Bank of China terrified of deflation and even domestically nervous over this deflation specter. But what it really looks like, at least from my perspective, it's just a slowing in the inflation or even hyperinflation rate that they're referring to as deflation. So it's almost as though they're looking at the problem from the wrong perspective. They don't recognize deflation is not really the problem. It's just a slowing in a severe inflation problem.
I'm a huge believer in the school of Austrian economics. I've been a follower for many, many years. What they say, basically, most economic cycles are predicated on sort of debt. And when you can add debt productively to a society, I mean, the economy moves forward. But once you reach the breaking point where you can't put debt in productively anymore, we're way beyond that point, there's only one of two outcomes. You can have a hard debt deflation by voluntarily stopping the, debt creation and money creation, or you can keep pouring it in there to keep the debt afloat, and you will end up with a hyperinflation. I think that it's become fairly clear to me that the powers that be do not want to trigger a debt deflation. So consequently, I think that there's a very high probability we're headed for some form of hyperinflation globally, which has never, ever happened in history before. We've had hyperinflations in regional areas, never globally, and I think that's where we're going.
Certainly seems to be the case, because we have central banker after central bank following the exact same series of steps. There has been a couple of nations. Iceland is one that comes to mind.
Well, Iceland's so small. I mean, it's smaller than the hometown I grew up in, which is only about 800,000 people.
We have this petri dish where everything is okay, but we're ignoring that scenario and going for the monetarist playbook instead, following it step by step. And as you say, the end game is something that I think very few people have on their radar screen.
I think that's absolutely right. I think the public suffers from cognitive dissonance. This is such a serious problem with no obvious solution, that the easiest thing is to do it, ignore it, and listen to people that tell them everything's going to be all right. It is not going to be all right. People should be paying very close attention to China. I mean, they are dramatically falsifying their economic numbers. I could give you a case where the Chinese economy might actually be in recession by now. And when you superimpose that kind of an economic outcome on their financial situation, where their shadow banking system is in disrepair, and the leverage in the system is ginormous, I think that they have no choice but to go to sort of unlimited money creation to keep the thing afloat. I mean, they announced 1.8% growth in a quarter, which is 7.2% annualized, and then in the next breath cut their interest rates. Come on, that didn't pass the smell test at all.
I mean, look at the Shanghai Index intervention from a few months earlier.
I think it's really significant, Chris, because, I mean, this was the growth engine in the world latterly, because the rest of the industrialized world was struggling, to put it mildly. And China was chalking up some fairly good growth numbers coming out of the global recession, because they just went for an election and printing money and creating debt in the system. I think they've gone, I don't think they can continue in this vein. They can continue pumping money in, but you're not going to get the economic response. What you will get ultimately is the destruction of their currency along with all the other currencies. This is headed for some form of global hyperinflation, I'm afraid.
Silver bullion coins are so scarce right now, the Perth Australian Mint, the British Royal Mint, and even the U.S. Mint are rationing their distribution of the coins. Now, if it were one mint or another, we could say, well, there's manufacturing delays or distribution. This sounds like that small group of people without your cognitive dissonance, as you refer to it, who have pulled their heads from the sand to pick up a bunch of silver, you know, that underloved inflation hedge.
My partner, Eric Sprott, and I believe that silver is the best investment on the planet at this point. Well, maybe the silver shares, but the safe investment, silver bullion. And be quite honest, I am amazed that they've been able to keep the price sub 16 for as long as they have. This is below the cost of a pure silver producer. And I think a lot of the silver that's coming as a byproduct out of base metal mines, that's going to fall because base metal demand is starting to fall. So I think there's going to be a massive shortage of silver. And the difference between silver and gold is that 75% of silver coming out of the ground goes into legitimate industrial uses. So there's only a limited amount available for investment. And there's very little inventory above ground that I can see that's left. So I think the silver at this moment is one of the great investments of all time. I think it's a 10-bagger easy.
Oh, absolutely. We're certainly on board with you there. And as we wrap up, we've brought up so many topics here that are pertinent to that 10-fold increase, if you will, potentially in silver. And you might say that's a low ball estimate if things really get out of hand.
You're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, people forget it was 35 years ago silver hit $50. And here we are 35 years later with all the inflation that's occurred and silver's trading at 15. I mean, this is bizarre.
You know, there's so many other factors like you talked about, you know, these $200 trillion on just the money center banks alone, five or six banks with $200 trillion of interest rate sensitive notional derivatives on their books.
Oh, I mean, let's not even get into derivatives. I mean, they will sink the banking system. We're not talking about if, it's just a matter of when.
Yes, financial weapons of mass destruction, as Warren Buffett refers to them. PhDs have trouble quantifying the potential risks there. I remember one fellow was lectured by Alan Greenspan many years ago that even if you had a PhD in math, you wouldn't understand these weapons of financial mass destruction. They had a room of people crunching the numbers.
You know, I think this is by far the most dangerous financial period in my lifetime, maybe in history, really. And 98% of the population seems to be oblivious to it. I mean, I'm just horrified at sort of the level of ignorance which has been engendered by the mainstream media, which has been lying to the public for years. But there's going to be a huge comeuppance here in the not too distant future.
I think it's well said. You know, if people could just change their ontology, their mindset, that worldview that I've got to make the most with my capital to I need to protect.
Without question, that's excellent advice. It's right now, it's not about what you're making in paper money. It's protecting real value, and you've got to have real things to do that going forward.
John Embry, it's always a great pleasure having you here on GoldSeek.com Radio. Would you like to share any contact information or pertinent information for our listeners today?
Yeah, well, as you know, I'm with Sprott Asset Management. You can contact us on the net, www.sprott.com. And there's a lot of interesting stuff on our website, and we produce a lot of products that are sort of the kind of stuff you should be owning going forward. So take advantage of it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Chris, it's my pleasure as always.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.